Begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language.
You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Yeah, I'm back.
Welcome back to Discourse. I'm Morgan Nickel, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, suitable for a mature audience.
I'm very tired this week, Dylan, but I'm celebrating my tiredness and slaking my thirst at the same time with a delicious beverage I've discovered. I'm so tired, I'm not drinking anything inappropriate. It's a fresh-up Feijoa fizzy fruit drink. I didn't even know it existed. They hide it on the bottom shelf, wrapped in plastic. It looks like a generic can, and yet, there it is, one of the best Feijoa drinks I've ever had. This is not a paid announcement. I'm just saying.
No, I mean, this wouldn't be the place they'd choose to advertise if it was.
No, we normally get people like Tip Top, not Fresh Up. Actually, they're probably owned by the same people.
Who knows? They're all owned by like three companies.
What have you been up to this week?
Nothing.
Hey, guess
Unless
what?
Unless you know something and you're trying to lead me into it and I've forgotten about it.
We've got a guest on Discourse.
And it's been a long time coming because this is probably the most requested person to come back to the show. Last on... In season one, episode four, this is episode 24 of season three, 2010, the heyday of Discourse. Back when people didn't know that, you know, we were never going to grow or improve. You know, we're basically going to stay infantile.
Oh, we got a little bit better since then. There's a change of host.
That's right. Well, last time, this is Bernard Hickey, last time we spoke to him under the guise of economist and founding editor of interest.co.nz. But he was a journalist before he was an economist, I believe. And he's returning to those roots with a new project, journalism.org.nz. Bernard, welcome back to Discourse.
G'day, how's it going?
It's going really good, and especially good now that you're here. I think you're going to class the joint up a little bit. For five or ten minutes.
Pretty stressful mission, but all right.
Not putting too much of a weight on your shoulders.
Yeah, no pressure.
Now, according to the site, journalism.org.nz, it's a trust, a not-for-profit trust, with the goal of creating and supporting public interest journalism, which seems to be something missing in New Zealand, funded by, I guess, a patronage model, almost a crowdfunding sort of model, but sort of subscriber patrons. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, we have this idea of opening journalism.org.nz up to members, saying, here's your chance to contribute to the creation of public interest journalism. And the more members and the more contributions we have, the more public interest journalism we can do. The idea being that if we can get thousands of members potentially paying, you know, $100 a year each or so, that we might actually be able to employ some journalists to ask some hard questions and report the answers and also get some journalism out there, not just on the website, but with partners of the site, particularly other mainstream media, television, newspapers, that sort of thing.
Do you remember how much trouble there was the last time a New Zealand journalist asked a hard question and John Campbell had to apologise to Ken Ring for it?
Yeah, Ken Ring might be someone to ask a few questions of, although I suspect...
Was that the last time?
Yeah, that was the last time.
Yeah, I suspect... I can think of a few other people to ask some hard questions of.
So public interest on the internet appears to mean that the site is going to be full of stories about adorable kittens. Is that approximately right?
No kittens at all. Kitten-free site.
I'm not sure it's going to work.
A meow-free zone.
All right, yeah, I'm out.
Yeah. No, I mean, the idea here is that the mainstream media, I suppose, the established media, the media that has to earn a living, is finding it much harder to earn a living because the advertising subsidy they had to pay for journalism is rapidly leaking away into the bowels of the internet. And in particular, a couple of large tapeworms in that bowel, Facebook and Google in particular, the advertising revenues that we thought might shift over with the people when they moved from reading their news or watching their news on television or in newspapers, the idea that it would shift across with the readers online is simply not happening. What's happening is that The advertising revenues are being gobbled up by the aggregators, the agencies, and the innards, if you like, of the internet, rather than the people who produce the food that goes into it.
So middlemen and ticket clippers, they're getting in the way. And so this is something that I think is often referred to as going from analog dollars to digital cents, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not just analog dollars to digital cents. It's analog dollars to hundredths of digital cents. Mm. Because of the last couple of years, we've seen some massive changes in the structure of how advertising is bought and sold online.
Yeah.
We now have these things called targeting networks, behavioral targeting networks. This is where whenever you bounce onto a site, someone on that site, possibly Google or Microsoft or someone else, will attach a cookie to you,
yeah,
to your browser, and follow you as you go from browser to browser. All those page impressions that you generate and people like you generate, let's say it's a 45-year-old man with some money in Auckland who's thinking of buying a golf bag or whatever, Google and whoever will work this out and then parcel together all your page impressions, put it into what they call an ad exchange, and then offer it up to agencies who will then bid for it. This creates an auction of sorts, and it essentially has pulled together lots of spare inventory, ad impressions on the internet, and made it useful to ad agencies and to advertisers. Unfortunately, what it has done, though, has driven down the yields from free advertising connected to actual publishing sites. And it's pulling in a whole bunch of new inventory from the likes of Google, and we're now seeing it with Facebook. And the other massive shift is the move to mobile, in particular smartphones. Mm. So that's added a whole new group of inventory to drive down the prices of online advertising. And it means that if you're hoping to support real journalism with advertising online, particularly if you're a free site, one that doesn't have a paywall, then you don't have much hope. And as we've seen overseas, people have pretty much giving up on advertising as a way to fund real journalism.
And the Herald saying they're going for a paywall themselves at some point.
That's true. Shane Currie came out the last week to say that he couldn't imagine not having a paywall. When you look at what's happened overseas, in particular in the United States, it's clear that, as you say, the digital dollars are transferring into hundredths of cents.
Yeah.
And if these businesses want to survive in any sort of way, they have to find some way to connect up with their readers online and ask for them to pay for the journalism, and or encourage people to keep their subscriptions to their physical newspapers. Mm. And obviously, if you can't get the material online for free, you're more likely to subscribe or keep your subscription to your newspaper offline. So that's what's happening. I often describe it as a corporate hospice. Now, this is a business where you're trying to eke out life for as long as you possibly can, make it as comfortable as you can for shareholders and hopefully employees, and administer as many good drugs and treatments so that the patient lives for as long as possible, but you know in the end they're going to die.
Yeah, and of course,
so the issue isn't so much that you think the journalists don't do a good job or that the news that news has been just irreparably damaged by commercialism. It's just that they can't afford to pay the good journalists. Is that just a bit?
That's true. I mean, there's been a lot of pretty good journalism done by the, established newspapers and television. It hasn't always been bad. You know, there's been lots of great stories and scoops. And in many ways, the newspapers and television and radio of the past has performed the role of the Fourth Estate. You could argue it hasn't done it well enough, but it has done something. But what we're seeing now is experienced, talented journalists being cleaned out because they're expensive and because the businesses that are there have to continue to make profits for their shareholders.
You see the impact even in simple things like, obviously a lot of the newspapers have cut down on sub-editors and things, and we get, simple grammatical problems, headlines that don't make sense. So, I guess if you see how, you can see that and you can imagine how it scales.
Yeah, I mean, there's evidence all over the place. Last week, for example, Fairfax in Australia sacked pretty much half of its mainstream columnists and opinion writers. There were hundreds of other sub-editors and journalists who left. A third of the journalists in the United States are now out of work. All around the world in television and newspapers, the inexorable leaking of ad revenues to the internet is causing those businesses to downsize, and that eventually means less resource dedicated to journalism, particularly real journalism. You can still do journalism that generates page impressions. I call it high sugar, low protein journalism.
Yeah. I've seen some interesting stories about how that works with
companies
like AFL.
Top 7 ways to greenify your home entertainment system.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good way to describe it. Yeah. There's lots of fancy ways of doing it. Lots of how-to guides. You know, if you can imagine Kim Kardashian hooking up with Sonny Boo Williams, and we have the pictures.
Oh,
to,
can I ever?
Everyone's going to click on that story. And if you've got it, and of course it's quite easy to get because probably the PR people for Sonny Bill and Kim Kardashian have sent you the story, then, it's high-sugar content. You're going to get lots of page impressions, and even if the advertising yield for those page impressions is low, you might be able to make some money out of it, particularly if you keep your costs low. Yeah. And you're getting the advent of some really interesting approaches to journalism. I call them churnalism, lots of PR people generating press releases which you reprocess into so-called news.
Well, there's even no end of, blogs and things, and in fact, proper news sites for that matter, that just rehash what other blogs have said. I think I saw a great flowchart about especially the Mac rumors sites, about how they all feed on each other and cite each other.
Yeah, eventually those blogs become echo chambers.
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting because the echo leaks out and it ends up in the mainstream media as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've all done it. We've all referenced someone else, and in a way that's what the internet is. It's just lots of references to other things. But in the end, you need to do real journalism. You actually have to ask people who are making decisions or experiencing things what's actually happening to them.
But that sounds expensive. How can you pay for that?
The real journalism, I mean, I'm not sure, I think it was George Orwell described journalism as information that people in power don't want to get out. And that's true. Yeah. And that means you have to dig a bit. You have to ask some questions. You have to put two and two together and make four. It's not easy and it's not cheap. And you have to apply resources to it. And you have to step away from the high sugar stuff and actually go and dig some high protein stuff out.
So what do you think is the future of news? I mean, it's obvious, your approach is what you can do. What do you think is the larger future? Are we going to see the end of grown-up journalism? Does it stop?
Ultimately, I think a lot of people care about their communities. They don't see the world as dog-eat-dog, my interests against your interests. As long as I've got what I want, I'm fine. And most people see themselves as part of communities, and be it national communities in places, towns, families, whatever it is. And they know that you have to cooperate, you have to be part of a system, be it a legal system, a political system, and that system should be fair and should deliver services and things that we all need in a way that we're comfortable with and that we think sustainable. And unfortunately, to do that, you really need some checks and balances. And there's already some checks and balances in place for modern democracies. You know, they have parliaments. They often have legal systems. They have courts and high courts and police and defence lawyers and all that sort of stuff. And that's all necessary and probably will stay. But you sometimes need a fourth estate to ask people hard questions, to hold them to account, to report on what's actually happening out there. Because often politicians and various other people who want to do things know that if other people don't know, then they're more likely to get away with it. Mm. And that's where the media comes in.
Was it Judith Collins who started – no, it wasn't Judith Collins, was it? It was her successor.
Polly.
Who started
releasing Trash YouTube press releases.
15 minutes.
Was it her, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, all the politicians now release their own YouTube video clips where they ask themselves questions. Yeah. And, I mean, everyone does it. And to give you an idea of the scale of the imbalance now between the forces of public relations and the forces of journalism, to give you an idea, in the Auckland City Council, there is now one reporter working full-time in any particular media on covering the Auckland Council. This is a council with thousands of employees, more than a million ratepayers now, billions of dollars worth of spending and revenues. One reporter, that's Bernard Orsman at the New Zealand Herald, who covers the entire council. Mm. Now, there are some other reporters at various other news organisations who will dip in and out, but aren't really following the story properly. One reporter. Mm. My understanding is that Auckland Council, has more than 20 people working in public relations and external communications.
And many of them probably used to be bad journalists at the Herald and other places.
Or they may have been very good ones.
Oh, possibly.
But now earning twice as much.
Or made redundant at some point, didn't they?
Yeah, or took redundancy and went for a job paying twice as much.
Yeah.
And in many cases, they might be doing good things. They might be writing, you know, press releases and news releases and creating their own publications to try and get the news out there, because there is no media to report what they're saying. Mm. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, slag off everyone in PR. Some of my best friends are in PR. But, you know, you've got to – when you're a reporter, your job is to hunt out the stuff that other people don't want published and to report lots of different points of view. But when you have the sources of news being PR, you end up with a very narrow understanding of what's going on, and often it's a cultured – pre-cooked, sliced and diced version of what's going on, not the messy truth.
Yeah, you only get the side that supports the argument that whoever it is wants to put forward.
That's right. Whoever pays them, and I mean, you know, and that means powerful interests get their voice heard in that type of media. The weak ones don't, and that's a problem. Because eventually, as you've seen in America, where the forces of the rich effectively have dominated the national political conversation, the way laws are written, the way regulators operate, and now you have this, you know, widening gap, this horrible disconnect between the main political forces, you know, people yelling past each other in blogs and it's just horrible. And, you know, you have decisions like Citizens United, where now I think it's less than 80 donors provided more than 90% of the funding for the Republican presidential campaign.
That's the 1%, because no one likes the Republicans.
The fraction of 1%. So how will Journalism Org NZ be a big voice in New Zealand media? How can we make that happen?
Well, lots of people can sign up and pay their less than $100 a week to make sure that it gets done. We'll make sure after November 1st that we have a site up and running which allows people to become members and start contributing to the news process and contributing to the news agenda and helping to support real journalism.
I can't
promise or even suggest that that'll mean we have, you know, dozens or even many journalists to start with. Yeah. But unless we've got a structure and a mechanism for people to pay for this journalism to be done in public. Remember, this is not a paywall. We're not saying only the people who can pay get to see this journalism. This is where people become members and effectively owners of the site, but they are gifting that journalism to the public.
I'm looking forward to getting that founding member badge. I really want it badly.
Oh, good.
Yeah, can't wait.
Very important question before we let you go. Have you watched The Newsroom? Did you like it?
I haven't. I no doubt will get it out on DVD or whatever it is. I'm one of these people who doesn't subscribe to all the channels on Sky.
Yes.
So one day it will come across my system.
Shouldn't be long now, I'd say.
I'll record it. I've heard good things, and Aaron Sorkin is a excellent scriptwriter, so we'll see.
Yeah. So November the 1st at Journalism Organs Ed, people can go there now. There is a site there already talking about what possibly the membership tiers could be like.
It's a very basic sort of a holding site, yeah. WordPress jobby, where I've talked about the sort of things that we're planning to do, why we're doing it, how we're doing it, what we're going to do next, and just getting people involved from the start so that people understand and feel confident that, you know, we have a structure and we're not just a bunch of people out there to have a rant and wander off, that we'll actually be real journalists there doing real things. Mm. And there'll be a structure so that the memberships will not be wasted.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to guess, we've got to let you go in a minute because I know we've already taken twice the time we promised you. I'm going to guess that you've already been contacted by a few journalists who are interested in being involved. Is there anyone that you can talk about that we might have heard of? Or is that secret?
Not apart from Russell Brown, who I mentioned in earlier discussions, and he's come out in his own blog and talked about his involvement with myself and journalism. Yeah. Again, it depends on how well the memberships go, how the creation of the site goes. It's very much a bootstrapping affair, and we'll do as much as we can with as much membership funds as we can, and see how we go from there. All we right. don't have a sugar daddy lumping up a huge sum of money, a la Graham Wood in Australia with the Global Mail. Mm. And we don't have, government funding or NZonia funding or anything like that. It really is going to be
I hear Rupert Murdoch has a lot of money. Maybe you should send him an email.
Yeah.
I was going to suggest Owen Glenn, but all right, if you like.
Owen Glenn, yeah, no, well.
I mean, he's got a few dollars.
Yeah, no, there's some interesting people around who are interested in this stuff and have a lot of money and actually care, actually, about, I mean, the thing about Murdoch is, and I've interviewed him, mm. he is actually a journo at heart, mm. and he actually cares about this stuff. Now, you can say he's it's all become warped and it's now about him and his business and he's using the massive power corrupts massively and all that. And goodness me, the disaster of the Sun and the News of the World and all that, I'm sure, is part of the culture he created. But what's interesting is there are a bunch of people who are now, rich and poor, are now genuinely worried about whether the business structures are right to fund proper for the state. Mm. Now, in some places, they've got some lucky breaks. In the UK, they have the BBC, obviously, and some other places, there are some models which are still working, and there are some journalism organizations who are doing a type of journalism which some people will pay for, the FT and Wall Street Journal and even New York Times, and they've got a massive brand and that sort of thing. But unless we find a way to connect up lots of real people spending their money with some journalists doing proper journalism, then we're not going to have a for the state, and we're not going to have hard questions being asked, and then bad things are going to happen, and we're all going to look at each other like the outfielders in cricket going, yours, yours, yeah. mine, no, yours, and it drops to the ground and nothing happens, mm. or even worse, something happens we weren't expecting or didn't want. Mm.
Well, I've been very worried about the media in New Zealand for quite a long time, so this is something I didn't even realise I was gagging for it, so... You know, you've got my shekels for at least a year to see how it goes, and I hope from a lot of other people as well. Bernard Hickey, thank you Cheers. So much once again for joining us on Discourse.
Thank you.
So, of course, Interest CoinZ is already up and running, and everyone who uses it, it's already familiar with the quality of work, Dylan, the depth of work that Bernard. Inspires. Now that is in, a specific
area, sort of finance and economics, and mostly it's about mortgages, naturally, but it also goes a bit wider. But, you know, getting a few dollars into the hands of people who, well, number one, experienced journalists who know how to ferret out a story, but number two, perhaps some of those people who are really interested in a niche and just need a bit of extra time, maybe, you know, maybe a hand held, maybe they could possibly be involved as well. Some of the transport blog people, yeah. People like Keith Ng, who, already is, you know, publishes, you know, in various places.
Yeah. It's even just giving them enough time to, even if it's not something they're deeply interested in, to properly understand the issues.
Yeah.
Because I think what I imagine happens is, you know, deadline pressure is such that you never really get the time you need to, I'm just assuming from, you know, movies I've seen about newsmen, that you never really get enough time to, you know, fully comprehend everything. And certainly from reading articles at times, you know, in the Herald and stuff and everywhere else, it becomes increasingly obvious that the journalists don't.
You know, understand. It's hard though. I mean, I'm only reading this stuff and, you know, it's a bit of a long-standing joke that I barely read most of the articles and only get through the headlines. But I try. I spend a lot of time going through the news in New Zealand, and it is really hard to keep up. It's really hard to keep track. And that's only, you know, for most of the time as a consumer. I'm very
sympathetic. People have to focus somewhat in what they want to cover as well. But I think what, I don't know, if you've ever been in a situation where you're kind of involved in a story,
yeah.
And then you read it reported on,
yeah.
It's very bullshit. Enlightening.
Yeah, it's always so wrong.
Well, it's not even something wrong. Sometimes it's just a failure to grasp a simple aspect of it that completely changes the way things come across.
Do you remember we were playing whatever game we were playing on the lawn at my place in Balmoral?
Yes.
And there was that hit and run of that little child.
Yes.
And I was interviewed on TV3, I think. And I was introduced as Morgan, who saw everything. I definitely did not see everything.
No, you heard something and then saw a few other things.
Exactly. And I think I was pretty clear when I spoke to them on the camera. And, you know, they made me do a couple of different takes to sharpen up and tighten it down. But, I mean, I felt like I told them the whole factual story. And yet, that the very first mention, you know, of what tiny role I had in it, was wrong.
Yeah, it's... Well, there's some interesting issues about, you know, just as you being an eyewitness, but it also pertains to how we, how things are reported is that people's perceptions, even when they think they're accurate, are not.
There was only one person who actually got it right. Everyone, I think, thought it was a dude driving that car. Only one person said it was a woman, and it wasn't me. I thought it was a dude. I thought it was a skinny young man, and it was a woman. Doing that hit and run. God, that was awful. I was sure that kid had died. Absolutely sure.
Yep.
Yeah, geez, that was tough, actually. That was really tough for a minute there. Yeah, this Feijoa, it's all gone now, and I'm sad about that. It tastes so Feijoa-y.
That's one of those divisive Feijoa is one of those flavours, isn't it?
I love it.
You either love it or you hate it.
Do you know what is a more divisive...
Nice Feijoa drink and a Marmite sandwich would do most people... Either very well or very poorly.
A more divisive flavour.
And now the news.
Dead bird found in Countdown salad. A Dunedin woman has found a dead bird. It looks like a sparrow.
It does.
In the photo. Has found a dead bird inside a Countdown supermarket salad mix, prompting an investigation by the chain. And this is why I always rinse all of my fruit and all of my salad mixes.
You want to make sure you rinse those dead birds out.
You got to get them out.
You don't need to do much. Just a quick rinse under the tap and a shake will get the dead birds out.
It'll get most of the dead birds out.
Yeah, well, certainly the big
70%
ones.
70% of the time it'll get 100% of dead birds out.
What? There was a few things that occurred to me about that story when I saw it. One is, every time I see something like this, I'm like...
Did you fake it?
No, well, that's not the first thought. I always think you've got the point of reporting it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, it happened.
Yeah.
Presumably... It isn't systematic. No one's putting dead birds in every bag of salad.
You know, if there were dead birds in every bag, then they'd probably charge more.
It was exactly. They'd weigh more. It was a freak occurrence. I'm sure the company involved is mortified by it. It will get fixed. No one else will find a dead bird in their salad. I don't really understand that. I kind of understand the point of reporting it, but mostly I think it's just for shock value.
Yeah, it makes people wince.
It makes us click on the link and look at the ads. But the other thing was like, surely the bag of salad would have been heavier than all the others. Like, birds weigh quite a lot more than lettuce leaves.
Well, it was a 300-gram bag of salad. How much does a sparrow weigh?
African or European?
3 ounces.
Did you see?
What's the speed and flight?
Good. All right.
Look, I'm not going to play your Monty Python games.
Fine.
House sparrow. They weigh between 24 and 39.5 grams.
Good to know.
So that might mean that it was only less than a 10% of the weight of the salad.
They look heavier than that.
They do, but then, you know, they do need to fly.
Good to know.
And feathers are big and light for a reason. Have you got any stories?
I have lots. Should we talk about some copyright stuff? I've got two copyright stories.
Oh, boy, let's do copyright stuff. That'd be
great. Squish them together. One is, there was a science fiction award. There's a science fiction awards called the Hugo Awards. I don't know why it's called the Hugo Awards. I probably could have researched that, but that didn't seem relevant.
Yeah.
They were broadcasting live on the internet, their awards, and while Neil Gaiman was giving an acceptance speech for a Doctor Who script, the Doctor's wife, I don't know anything about Doctor Who, but maybe you do. Paul Brislin certainly will.
Sure.
The live stream on Ustream went down.
No. Why? Did their Wi-Fi break?
WorldCon banned due to copyright infringement.
Yeah. The Hugo Awards, I'm sorry, I don't mean to step on this. The Hugo Awards are named after Hugo Gernsback, the founder of the pioneering science fiction magazine Amazing Stories.
There you go. So it went off. The reason it went off was because Ustream uses a magical copyright theory to determine whether copyright content is being streamed, and if it is, obviously it takes action.
So what you're saying is that the science fiction web stream was taken down by an out-of-control robot.
I called it a theory, but yeah, you can call it a robot. And it was because they had, just before Gaiman stepped up to receive his award, they had screened clips from his winning episode as well as some other Doctor Who episodes and a Community episode.
Yeah.
And obviously those, at least one of those items was in this content matching system and got matched and the thing taken down. Ustream has since apologised, said they became immediately aware, almost immediately noticed a flood of livid Twitter messages.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they were unable to lift the ban before the broadcast ended.
Yeah. You know, with these dull tools of these content pattern matching robots that don't have any idea about what the context of the use is, reminds me of that old phrase everyone's heard, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything starts to look like a hippie.
That's right. The it's interesting. I've had this experience myself. I've purchased a license to use some production music. Well, actually, no, I was given a license to use some production music, but that's not the point. The music was licensed. For my film, for my 48-hour film this year.
Yeah.
When I uploaded it to YouTube, YouTube said, we've detected a copyright infringement.
What?
This piece of music is owned by this outfit here. And the outfit that I apparently owned it was not even
the licensing music company
that publishes it. It was just one of the companies that licenses access to that music somewhere in the world.
What the fuck?
So I had to then,
do these people not realize they're operating in a global environment?
Well, then I had to lodge that's not really an infringement claim. And then in doing that, you have to accept that if you're found to actually be infringing when you say you're not infringing, your entire account can be closed and you can be banned permanently from YouTube.
Yeah.
That's before this is very important, they say, if you're going to lodge this complaint, you need to know this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anyway. Same thing. Vobile is the company that Ustream uses that did the content matching.
Yeah.
Which is the hammer that sees everything looking like a bit like a hippie.
Yeah.
Second content copyright story.
Next story.
I've got one.
Okay.
Bruce Willis.
Oh, good.
To fight Apple over rights to music collection after his death. Well, I've read that actually he's only thinking about it. This says he's preparing, but this is the son, so who knows. The diehard actor, who you may have heard of, age 57, who knew, wants to leave the hall, his music collection, to his daughters Rumour, Scout and Tallulah. But under iTunes' current terms and conditions, customers essentially only borrow tracks rather than owning them outright, which is strange then when the button says buy.
isn't it?
Does it?
Well, I believe it does.
It is interesting because you're not, well, you're buying something, but what you're buying is a license, and that license isn't transferable.
Yeah, but why not? Why is, because it's not like it costs less than buying, the equivalent of buying a single track from a CD. And sometimes, you know, you're buying an entire CD. Many people don't buy single tracks.
The reason the license is not transferable, presumably, is to prevent people from being allowed to sell it. And there being a second-hand market in licensed digital music.
Yeah, but of course that's not.
I mean, that would have been something that Apple and whoever else would have had to agree to get access to the music in the first place.
Yeah. So let's see. I'm opening Come of Age Deluxe Edition by The Vaccines, and right there on the button it says $2.39 buy.
Oh, there you go.
It doesn't say $2.39 rent. $2.39 lease. $2.39. I mean, that a buy to me implies that it's freehold, not leasehold. $21.99 buy album. That sounds about how much you'd pay for a CD in a store. So it's not like you're saving much, and it costs them less to deliver it. So just what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. No, I mean,
I think some changes are needed.
I don't think it's Apple's fault. Well, it wouldn't have been Apple's idea. Well, maybe it was Apple's idea. Probably wasn't Apple's idea. But people have pointed out, oh, well, he can just give them the files, and he can. But at that point, they're no longer legal.
He can burn them to disk.
He
can burn them to disk and then give them those CDs. But you know, that sort of workaround is stupid.
Well, the workaround is irrelevant. The point is, at that point, they can have the music, sure, but it is not legally theirs.
Meanwhile, if you paid exactly the same amount for exactly the same tracks, but on vinyl or on CD or on tape or on 8-track or on Laserdisc, if you can even get music Laserdiscs, he'd be able to give them to whoever he friggin' well wanted.
That's right.
It's stupid. So I've just looked it up after speaking with Bernard about, you know, how do you fund media in this modern age? Our biggest advertiser, Discord.co.nz/VPN. Our total current earnings in US dollars. I haven't worked it out actually. Actually, I'm going to do that now. Let's see. No spoilers. $125.96 in New Zealand dollars.
What do you think for the however long the show's been running?
Yeah.
Probably equates to about a dollar an episode.
Yeah, probably around about that. It's $157.56.
Ooh, might be $2 an episode.
Oh, boy.
$3.
We are fucking rolling in it. That's almost paid for one of the microphones, Dylan.
Except you promised to give that money to some charity.
Yeah, I know. I haven't actually taken it out of the
account.
That's okay.
It's probably not worth it yet.
What I was doing was leaving it until it hit $100 before I'd withdraw and put it into, I can't even remember what they were called now.
Kiva, wasn't
Kiva.
It?
Kiva. And then it went past that, and I still haven't done it. So I guess I better
do it. Oh, dear. The Recording Industry Association New Zealand. This is another story.
Yeah.
Press the button. That makes another story happen.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Next story.
Sorry, look. Before we go and do that thing, can I just...
Corrections.
According to theguardian.co.uk, Bruce Willis isn't suing Apple over iTunes rights. The idea that the diehard star would be suing because he wants to pass on his vast digital music library to his children is enticing, but doesn't stand up to reflection or to his wife's consideration.
Next story.
So he likes the idea of suing them, and he's grumpy about the way they're doing it, but he's not going to do it. Yeah. The Recording Industry Association New Zealand, you may have heard of them.
Yeah.
They represent some music companies.
Yeah. Music companies that don't want their names associated with lawsuits. The whole thing is a cover so that they don't get the bad press associated with suing children and grandmothers and beneficiaries.
Generally speaking, so they're now going to sue some New Zealand people, not really sue them. They're going to take them to the Copyright Tribunal, people who have received their 3 strikes under the, quote, Skynet law.
Right. Because the first people that managed to make it to 3 strikes, they let those lapse.
Yep, and they got back down to 0 strikes, I guess. So 3 telecom customers are being taken to the Copyright Tribunal.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
The Copyright Tribunal will do whatever it is they do.
Yeah.
At some point, and we'll know precisely a bit more about what happens at that stage. We still don't know.
What does a download track cost you, an illegal one, for instance? You know, do you need to seed it, or do you just need to be a leecher?
So the maximum damages under the Act, are they
$15,000? But the assumption is that that's going to be for people who were doing it for some kind of financial gain rather than people who just downloaded a single track. I think it's going to be quite
well, the expectation, I think, everywhere outside of the US is that it's not, you know, worth $125,000 per track.
Not like an American woman who was fined. Well, how much was that? A grandmother, $2 million for 24 tracks. I think
that's an expensive CD.
Yeah. So we don't know when this will happen because the Copyright Tribunal isn't like a thing that sits in a place just waiting for people to come to it. It's a let's call it a law.
A movable feast.
Super force that comes together when called upon by a magic light that's shone in the sky.
Yeah.
It will be convened at some point in the future. We don't know when.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens in terms of, in fact, everything about the procedure. We don't know if the accused people will be named. We don't know if they have to be present physically in a place or whether it'll all be argued by filings, I guess.
Well, we will find out.
Next story.
Man's body found at Christchurch Cemetery. Dylan,
ooh.
Police are seeking help to identify a man found dead in a Christchurch cemetery. I've done some research. I went to cemeteries all across Auckland over the last couple of days since this story came out. And I've discovered that I'm worried that there might be an unknown, unreported massacre, serial murder going on in New Zealand. I went to cemeteries in central Auckland, out west, and down south. And I found dead bodies, or evidence of dead bodies.
I was going to say, I don't think you found any actual dead bodies.
In all of them. Every single one.
Goodness gracious.
And I've never heard anything about this before.
One wonders if perhaps the police might be talking about something slightly different to what you're talking about. One does wonder. Is there more detail in the story perhaps you could share?
Detective Senior Sergeant Tony Hill confirmed this morning the police were seeking assistance from the public to help identify a body found in the grounds of Waimairi Cemetery in Burnside on Saturday. The body was found by a member of the public around 8:30 a.m., said Hill. The deceased was described as Caucasian, about 18 years old, of slight build, weighing about 70 kilograms and about 175 centimetres below ground.
What?
No. That's how tall he was. I'm sorry. Oh, here we go. It's all come clear. With short brown dreadlocks. You cannot trust a white dude with dreadlocks. Just imagine how you, if you had any daughters and, your daughter came home, if your daughter came home with a white dude with dreadlocks, you know that he has extremely poor judgment. You know that he is nothing but trouble. He's going to have those Roman fingers. He's going to have octopus hands and he's going to probably be sniffing glue before you can say anything. He doesn't drink and drive, but he does oohoo and drives. That's for sure, if you can even still get that.
Good to know.
I'm not even sure if you can still get that.
There will be an apology later. I'm sure of it.
Next story.
I'm giving one to you.
Oh, good.
Prime Ministers, blah, 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 blah. Are you ready for that? Are you ready?
Key has welcomed the opportunity to join the USA in future conflicts, I think. That's. Let me just read the exact quote for you. That's probably quite important. This is from the U.S. What are they called? Department of State? No, whatever. State Department. Yeah, State Department. This is from the U.S. State Department's official transcript of the Pacific Islands Forum. John Key said, and I quote from the transcript: "We welcome the opportunity to cooperate with the U.S. in the next conflicts."
Yeah.
Secretary Clinton and I discussed a broad range of issues in the Asia-Pacific region as we look towards the APEC summit in Russia in around 10 days' time. New Zealand warmly supports the United States rebalancing towards the Asia-Pacific, and we welcome the opportunities to cooperate further. In that context, we discussed our ongoing efforts to negotiate alongside a number of other countries a Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Secretary Clinton and I share the goal of securing a high-quality 21st century free trade agreement, which will be of significant benefit to all countries involved, indeed to the region as a whole.
Which has nothing like what you said.
No. No, you're right. It sounds almost like the transcript is completely wrong.
Completely wrong. And suggests that we are going to engage in military action when we're talking about trade.
Yes. So that was funny. Some some bloggers originally picked up on the transcripts and were rightly outraged, and then I think Russell Brown was the first to find the actual recording and find out what was really happening.
Yeah.
Hilarious. I think the State Department has corrected their transcript now.
Well, you'd hope so, because we don't actually want to go to any more wars.
They also have a number of inaudibles in there, which were clearly audible to me, but then again, I kind of am used to listening to that man.
He sounded like he had a fat tongue, but aside from that, everything was clear. If you're going to have someone transcribing, you know, international leaders' speeches and statements...
they should be.
Well, for one thing, you can probably get the written version without problem. He's probably posted it on a bloody website. It's probably all over the New Zealand internet. On Scoop, for instance, maybe on nationalparty.co.nz or whatever the hell their website is. Yep. So there's no need to make this sort of stupid mistake. What sort of lazy bastards are they? I ask you. You can't answer.
None. They're very, very lazy.
Lazy.
It does seem you can certainly imagine some much greater trouble coming out of it than just our bemusement.
Next story.
Official in dark over eruption for 100 minutes. Not any official, but the Civil Defence Minister, Chris Tremaine. He is refusing to answer questions on why it took 100 minutes for Taupo-based emergency management staff to be told of Mount Tongariro's eruption last month. So the local people who would be able to help any injured or trapped or whatever people on the ground who had been affected directly by the eruption, they weren't told for nearly 2 hours. Now, the reason that I'm bothered by this is that there's been an assumption for a long... Number one, we didn't get much bloody warning about this going off. And I understand...
Is there any warning? There was no warning.
There was no warning. I understand I think that they knew that it felt like there was more activity, but they didn't know there was going to be an eruption. I think that's right.
I think
the reason I'm worried about this is that we live in a goddamn volcanic field, Dylan. We live in a city built... on and around volcanic cones. And our cones work in such a way that the next volcano that comes up, and I'm not saying if, I'm saying when, it will come up in a new place because that's how our ones work. And, I mean, you know, we've had calderas go off in New Zealand before. That's what Taupo is itself. You know, we've had giant volcanoes go off not particularly long ago. Rangitoto is a pretty big volcano. It would be no fun if it went off now. You know, people could be seriously hurt. The reason I haven't been too fussed about that is that my expectation was that we'd have probably a couple of days of warning. But it turns out these fuckers can't find their own asses with two hands and a flashlight, let alone with a bunch of expensive scientific equipment which we've paid for in grants for them to operate and apparently misread constantly. And then not only do they not give people, you know, fair warning about upcoming dangers, even just suspected upcoming dangers, but they don't bother telling the first responders on the ground when it's bloody happened. So, I mean, this is quite frightening.
This is why I'm on Twitter. Twitter will tell me almost immediately if there's a volcano erupting in Auckland.
Unless all the internet goes down.
No. Well, I suppose it would have to, it could pop up under the SkyTel or under where the...
Or under Orcom.
Under where the fire comes in, yeah.
There's a whole bunch of places where it could cause a great deal of trouble for, you know, a lot of people. You know, the cell network is not necessarily robust. Many people don't even have home phones. You know, I mean, what if the power went down? You know, our power infrastructure has already been demonstrated to be pretty vulnerable. It turns out we might not get much or any early warning. And then once it had happened, it turns out that all the infrastructure that I mistakenly assumed was in place to deal with, you know, disasters of any magnitude doesn't work. Or doesn't work smoothly anyway. Hopefully, out of this will come a realisation that they're making some stupid, ridiculous mistakes. I mean, how many phone calls would it have taken to notify these locals? Probably not very many. Call the fire service and tell them to call everyone else. And they will bloody well do that. But, you know, then you need to have that call.
It would be nice if they could tell us why it didn't happen.
Wouldn't that be nice? Do you have more stories?
Next story.
No more stories.
Now, this one is maybe a storm in a teacup. This is about oldkim.com.
Good old Kim.com. The internet loves him. Twitter loves him.
Well, I think that he's... I think a lot of people are on the fence about him. I don't trust the guy at all. As I've said probably, you know, at too much length in the past. .com draws fire for rape joke tweets. Now, the thing is, he didn't make any rape jokes at all. He...
not true. He did make a reference, which has since been deleted, which is why he tweeted the rape joke.
I think that after he got in trouble, he spoke about his wife having said... Is this what you're talking about?
No. Before that, last night, he tweeted something.
Oh, yeah?
Unfortunately, I don't remember what it was. I can't remember where I saw it, but he tweeted something which got some negative feedback, which he took down.
Cool
and
story.
Then, as I understand it, that was the reason he then posted the the link the next day.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I don't remember what that was.
So what he said, middle of the damn day today, was, warning, do not read beyond this point unless you have a sense of humour. Here are 15 rape jokes that work. And then he linked to Kate Harding's website. She apparently is a feminist. I don't know that that gives her any particular authority to speak about, you know, rape jokes. But I think it's much more comfortable for women to discuss this stuff than for men to. Because although men, obviously, are sometimes victims of sexual abuse, it tends to happen much less frequently than for women. But the thing is that the list, it's not even that bad. I mean, she specifically says that it's just the list of jokes is not jokes that she thinks are necessarily going to be funny for everyone, but jokes that she thinks work, you know, structurally they work, number one. And secondly, actually the main thing she said was that they're constructed so that rape victims are not the butt of the joke. And that seems to be important to her.
She says that, but then actually in a number of cases they are. But anyway.
I have enjoyed a lot of rape jokes in the past. But usually it's about raping murdered children.
Brendan Lovecraft.
Exactly. And that stuff in the past was hilarious. But I found that funny, I think, when I was even more stupid and buffoonish than I am now. And I don't know how I would feel now if he made that joke for the first time out of the blue now, because I think that jokes about that sort of stuff, people are now much more conscious of, you know, the dangers of, you know, the rape culture stuff that we've spoken about before. People are much more conscious about that now. So people are much more careful about how they word their jokes. Now, that one, Brendan's one, it's shock comedy. You know, he just keeps re-upping on what he's saying. First, he's raping a child. Then he's raping it, you know, not in the mouth, but where its head used to be, that kind of thing. Wait, should I? I didn't mean to say that, and yet I did. I apologize if you are a murdered child.
The original tweet.
I got myself in trouble, Dylan. I got myself in so much trouble.
Yeah, the original tweet he sent, which he deleted, I believe, was last night, and he said, "Fly on the wall, John, to Hillary, John Key, Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, Madam President, Home Secretary. Please give me another chance. Should we allege some rape?" The idea being, I suppose, that Kim.com could be extradited under some rape charges.
Like Julian Assange.
Yes.
Corrections.
I'm really sorry that I quoted any of that stuff from Brendan Lovegrove. It's obvious to me in retrospect that I shouldn't have done that.
Good.
We are just about to run out of time. We've got about 7 minutes in which to do... I think we're not going to do much more news, but have you got an Urban Dictionary Discourse Weekly Show? Urban Dictionary!
Urban Dictionary, Word of the Week.
Word of the Week.
No.
Have we got a Discourse Weekly Show on the show? It's the Best of Life Hacker on Discourse.
Best of Life Hacker.
I haven't got one.
Oh, no, this is terrible.
Wait, let's open up the toot bag.
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 Corned beef. There's no toot bag. Hey, Dylan.
Oh, that's good.
Hey, Dylan.
Hey.
Discourse.co.nz/VPN. It's surprisingly inexpensive.
Oh, that's answered all my questions.
Yeah. Rate and review the show.
RANZ, Three Strikes Tribute. Copyright Tribunal thing? I just can't remember something.
Yes.
Oh, good. Sorry. Just sure. What were you talking about just before that?
Good question. Let me go back. Was I talking about .com? Was I talking about an earthquake? The eruption of...
Also .co.nz/VPN? No.
Was I talking about...
Okay, good.
Deniability?
Next story.
Amazing images from Google Street View. Let's talk about photos on the radio. All right, well, I mean, if you're interested, just go to the show notes and click the link. This is stills taken from Google Street View of amazing scenes. I'm not going to bother describing them to you. But, you know, it's people getting patted down by police and what looks like a tiger walking across a suburban car park and forest fires and just beautiful vistas and, you know, weird artifacts of compression and, you know, the way the photos have been stitched together, just collated into one page. It's really, really nice. You should check it out if you like surprisingly unexpected and wonderful photographs.
You just reminded me, I got passed by a Google Street View car a while ago, and I keep going back to where it happened to see if my photo's uploaded there yet, but no.
Might take a while.
Still the November 2009 photo.
So, at the moment, it's sort of in the vote period, kiwi.nz, another second-level domain. The way this will work is if enough people say they will buy one or sort of do a provisional registration, if enough people do that, I think it's like 300 or 500 people, then this stupid second-level domain will be created. Even more stupid, actually slightly less stupid, but stupid on a similar level as .geek.nz. Absolutely ridiculous that it should exist. But at the same time, there's a proposal that we completely drop second-level domains and just go to .nz. So people who already hold domains would be first in line. So, for instance, we would be able to get probably...
But why?
Discourse, because we don't need as many domains as we've got. We should simplify. We don't need .gen.nz or .org.nz and co.nz and
acnz
and .school.nz and .ewi.nz and .govt.nz and .mil.nz and .geek.nz and now .kiwi.nz. We're a small fucking country. It is absolute madness that we have so many second level domains.
I think it's madness that we have so many, but I don't think we don't need any.
Govt.nz,
for example, is incredibly useful.
Sorry, to say that again?
Govt.nz is very useful.
And Govt would be registered by the government, and then it would already work the way it currently works. Govt is a server already.
Yeah, org right? isn't.
So that's essentially the way the whole thing could work. Now, there could be a bit of a scrap between people where different people have a co.nz and an org.nz. I think it would probably be operated based on when it was first registered. So I'm not saying that this would be completely without difficulty. I think it's a great idea.
I don't think we'd take away the ones that are there.
If we don't take away the ones that are there, there's no point in stopping taking new ones. Why? What we have now is a messy system with too many second levels. It just looks crufty. I think that with .us, with .canada, I don't think they have all of these. And they've got much bigger populations than we do.
Yeah. Well, .us is barely used.
That's right, because they use .com. Everyone uses .com, really.
Trying to get a domain name at .com is...
And you don't need .org.com, do you? You don't need .ac.com. No, you don't, because it's used sort of as a generic top level. And there, you know, it's hard to find good ones now, but that's years later. And it's treated as an international domain. We don't need as many second levels as we've got. And we really, I think, it's a much better idea, you know, certainly... than creating KiwiNZ or GeekNZ or .bank.nz. It's a much better idea to just drop second levels entirely. Go through that pain once and then just have, you know, discourse.nz. Telecom.nz, ASB.nz. Because at the moment, everyone just has to register so many redundant domains, and it is stupid. We are just about to run out of time.
All right, good. I disagree with you. There we go.
All right, I would love to hear more about why you disagree.
No, I've got nothing. Just don't like it.
Well, why not? Maybe you should unpack that. It might just be a knee jerk.
It is to some extent. I could argue for and against individual top level domains, but or second level domains. But I'm not. I don't think none is better than some.
1 minute.
Why not?
Because I think it provides, certainly in some cases, a useful distinction. AC.nz is quite useful.
AucklandUniversity.nz, it's pretty clear what it is.
Yeah, but Auckland.ac.nz is easier.
It's actually not, because also, that could be Auckland University of Technology. That could be any academic institution in Auckland. It actually doesn't tell you who it is.
Well, I guess
you
not.
You just know from experience that it's Auckland University.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. The domain names give you a hint in some cases.
Not a very good hint
and,
at
and
the
it
moment.
Does make it easier to pick a domain name or to guess one, I guess. Whereas, you know, in .com scenarios, or you know, where there's contention
Five.
Over a specific term, it becomes hard to find the
Four.
Right ones.
All right. You...
Three...
I'm right.
Disagree with me. That's
Two.
All. That's all I'm going to say. It's been so lovely having you on the show
One.
Again. It was great having Bernard. See you next week. Right, review the show on iTunes. Love you. Goodbye.
To the weekly show on Sorry. With God.
All right. We're using that one.
Tune in right now for the extra large extended edition, available on discourse.co.nz or in your iTunes if you're already subscribed to the weekly show.